Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of the Timber Jay newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being with us.
Well, happy to be here.
Let's start off with a conversation about a story you covered about Voyager Country ATV Club. They have a new interesting project. Tell us about it.
Yes, well, this is a project that's going to make a big difference to folks who are into ATVs and snowmobiling in northern St. Louis County. And actually, it'll have repercussions, I think, across a broader area as well over time. Basically, what they did was, for a long time, there have been like two separate networks of ATV trails. And most ATV trails up here are just basically connections to various logging roads. And, you know, just they wind through the woods. And they can be quite extensive. And there's some in northeastern St. Louis County, and there's a whole other network in northwestern St. Louis County. But for a long time, the two had never really connected. That's what now the Voyager Country ATV Club, they decided a few years ago that this needed to change. And so they started a planning and organizing and seeking funding to build a bridge across the Vermilion River. Vermilion River goes from Lake Vermilion north to Crane Lake. And it just runs north to south, kind of right through the heart of northern St. Louis County and divides the county up. And so by putting this bridge in, they were able then to link the trail network in northwestern St. Louis County to the trail network in northeastern St. Louis County. And it turns out this past weekend, they were able to finally complete this four-year effort. It was a pretty spectacular and dramatic project lifting this bridge. And this bridge was actually built off-site. It's 185 feet long, weighs 80 tons. And they had two gigantic cranes, and I'm not exactly sure how they got them in there because there's no road access to this site. It's just, you know, ATV trails and whatnot, and you can't really drive typically a vehicle. So it must have been quite a challenge getting these giant cranes in there, but they did, and they were able to then lift this huge bridge into place and cross the river. And now this, like I said, this will be a connection between these different trail networks, and it'll be able to be used by both ATVs as well as snowmobiles in the winter. And they had to make the bridge to high enough capacity. It can hold 15 tons, so it can support the weight of a groomer and snowmobiles and number of ATVs. They also have nice observation decks, which are basically in the middle of the bridge, so you can look off either side down the Vermilion River, which is a beautiful river. A lot of wild rice, actually, this year. It's been a fantastic crop. So now this is in place, and they'll be having a ribbon cutting, which will be bringing in officials from St. Paul and from the U.S. Forest Service, as well as St. Louis County. I mean, this was there were a lot of agencies involved, the U.S. Forest Service, the DNR, St. Louis County, in addition to the ATV Club. And, of course, most of the funding for this project came from the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, and also ATV user fees. This was a pretty big project. There's a lot of interest in it, and I bet there's going to be a ton of people up there for the ribbon cutting. And this is next Friday at 11 a.m. And there's actually, it coincides with a fall ride and rally for ATVAM, which is the statewide ATV organization. They're going to be up in Crane Lake for a three-day weekend with this ribbon cutting on Friday, and then a lot of other activities planned for the weekend. So it should be a lot of fun up there.
This may be a dumb question, but I'm assuming ATV and snowmobile trails bring in a lot of tourists and money into northern Minnesota. Is that right?
They sure do, yeah. There's no question about it, and I think more in recent years as the interest has grown, and then there's been more and more concentrated effort on trying to expand these networks of trails. So when people do come up, they've got, you know, an organized system that they can ride on.
Well, let's move on to another story, the continuing story on Frontier Communications. This week, we heard about what the Attorney General's comments were. What was his take on what the Department of Commerce came out with?
Yeah. Well, and just to give a little background, too, I mean, we talked a week or so ago about a settlement that had been proposed between the Department of Commerce and Frontier Communications. And in reporting on it, I felt like the settlement had really kind of let Frontier a little bit off the hook. It seemed like they were not really requiring them to do very much. And essentially that was the Attorney General's take on the settlement as well. The Attorney General wrote that the proposed settlement remedies strike the Office of Attorney General as paltry compared with Frontier's alleged misconduct as set forth in the department report. And that was a direct quote from the comments. And one of the things I think where the Attorney General was most concerned was that there really was no financial penalty to Frontier for years of violating a number of, or at least allegedly violating a number of Minnesota laws on telecommunications. And the Attorney General cited a 1996 settlement where similar complaints had been aired against U.S. West. In that case, the settlement required U.S. West to pay a $5 million fine. That money was put in escrow to pay off compensation to customers, and then the remaining funds were used to expand and upgrade telecommunication services to Minnesota schools, libraries, and rural health care centers. You know, so there was some kind of a financial penalty. At the same time, they provided incentives for U.S. West to improve their future compliance by setting up some performance metrics and penalizing the company when they failed to meet those metrics. So I think it's clear that the Attorney General would like to see a little bit more meat on this settlement in terms of trying to address past issues with Frontier and having some sort of penalty there, as well as providing a little stronger incentive for them to improve their customer service going forward. There were a number of other issues that the Attorney General was concerned about, you know, saying that some important issues, the agreement of kicking the can down the road was the term they used. Clearly, the Attorney General is not particularly pleased with this settlement. And I should mention, too, that the Attorney General is currently conducting their own investigation into Frontier into some other issues over which the Public Utilities Commission doesn't necessarily have authority. So we're still waiting to find out when those findings will be issued by the Attorney General. And then I should mention, too, that ultimately the decision on whether or not this settlement is implemented as written or modified will be made by the Public Utilities Commission. And they're expected to take the matter up sometime this fall, but we don't know exactly when at this point.
Another story you covered in the Timberjay this week has to do with sauna. How'd I do on the pronunciation?
You did great.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
My Finnish grandmother would be happy. Tell us who's Glenn Auerbach and why did you feature him?
Yeah, well, Glenn is he's actually a Lake Vermilion resident in the summertime. He doesn't live up here all year round. But Glenn is a sauna aficionado, fanatic. I don't know what you'd call him, but I tell you, this guy, I guarantee you, he is clean because he saunas a lot. He has a blog that he runs. It's called Sauna Talk, and you could Google that and find his website if you're interested. But he gave a presentation recently on Lake Vermilion just about sauna. Not only what he finds exciting and what he likes about sauna, but also the health benefits that are achieved through regular sauna. He recently went to Finland, actually, to learn more about that. He was there for 14 days and took 50 saunas during that period.
Whoa.
Yeah. You know, like I said, this guy is clean. And he talked with experts over there about the health benefits. And turns out that folks who sauna regularly, and by that I mean 4 to 7 times a week, based on studies done over in Finland, and these are legitimate studies, and they found that they had reduced cardiovascular disease, lower blood pressure, and lower levels of Alzheimer's and dementia. You know, certainly that should perk up the interest of people, not to mention the fact that you're awfully clean if you sauna that many times a week. But he wanted to go over and learn more about that, and of course that's valuable to him as he spreads the word about the value of sauna. And a couple of things that he did say, number one is he really likes sauna to be hot, and apparently there's some benefit to that. And when he says hot, he's talking 180 to 200 degrees, and that's a hot sauna. He said one of the keys to the health benefits of sauna is to go through a heating up and cooling off process twice while you're doing it. So you heat up in a hot sauna, you know, for about 10 minutes or so, and then you go outside and cool off. Either you jump in the lake, rub some snow on yourself, or throw cold water on yourself to the point where you get cold, and then you go back in and heat up again, and then you do it again, a second time with the cooling off process. So that's part of that getting the most value from sauna in terms of the health impacts. And hydration, he said, is also important. He recommends drinking at least 20 ounces of water before taking a sauna and then drinking water during and after. So that's all interesting stuff, and if people want to learn more, I would suggest they go to his website, because it has tips on sauna building as well as sauna taking.
So. I'm also, I looked while I was listening to your story, and he's got a podcast called Sauna Talk that he's...
Oh, yes.
So you can hear the whole thing as well. So cool stuff.
Definitely.
Well, before we go, let's talk hunting. Grouse opener is tomorrow, and how's the bear season doing? Let us know.
Bear harvest right now is up about 45% over the same period last year, and it looks like a lot of the wild foods were down a little bit this year, so, you know, the bears are more receptive to the baits that the hunters are putting out. So
grouse season opens tomorrow, too.
Yeah, you know, at this point, nobody's really predicting what hunters are going to find as they head out. You know, early season tends to be a little tougher because you still have a lot of leaves on the trees and shrubs and whatnot. I really have heard mixed reports. It just depends on who you talk to. Some people are seeing a fair number of birds and some good-sized broods out there, and others are seeing next to nothing. Probably depends on whether you zig or zag when you're out there in the woods and to whether or not you run into some birds. But the only way to find out if there's birds out there is to get out and tramp through the woods, and that's always fun this time of year.
That's right. And maybe sauna afterwards. That would be good.
Absolutely. Yep.
Marshall Helmberger is the editor and publisher of the Timberjay. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Marshall will check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.